Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. Hello, my name is Brooke Taylor. Actually, still on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, but delighted to bring you into that experience next week on the show after returning and going through some audio, working on a segment to bring you some of the sights and sounds from that trip. And I think, especially during Lent, that'll be a beautiful mini meditation as well. So have those highlights next week. On today's show, though, talking about the urgent call and gift of transmitting the faith. Parents, grandparents, the responsibility is an enormous one. We know that to teach our children, our grandchildren, the gospel message, to introduce our children to Jesus, to know, love, and serve him, the richness of our church, the graces that flow from the sacrament so that someday they will get to heaven and be a saint. No pressure, right? I mean, that's a lot. And it's easy to get discouraged when the rest of the world doesn't seem to be getting that memo or helping us out with that. So after today's show, I hope that you will have a renewed sense of vigor about that call, as well as a sense of understanding what an incredible job you are doing and have done. And it is so hard. Why specifically it is so hard for the younger generation to seem to want to know and love Jesus. So let's jump in. In 1981, St. Pope John Paul II gave us Familiaris Consortio. This is an apostolic exhortation focusing on the role of the Christian family in the modern world, and it is a treasure. I love it. I go back to it frequently, and I think it's especially valuable in a time now that we're in where we are seeing an overall decline in traditional religion. Today, we're going to focus on a new book, Unpacking the Landscape of Faith and Values in Contemporary America. And it's based on the findings from a new book. Dr. Christian Smith is the author from the University of Notre Dame. And in there, we will sprinkle in some gilded wisdom from Familiaris Consortio that I hope will encourage you. And mixed with this fascinating read, I think it will also offer a lot of encouragement as well. So the title of the book is called Religious Parenting, Transmitting Faith and Values in Contemporary America, written by Dr. Christian Smith, along with Bridget Ritz and Michael Rotolo. Joining me now, Dr. Smith, by the way, a William R. Keenan Jr. Professor of Sociology at the University of Notre Dame. His books include Religion, What It Is, How It Works, and Why It Matters. And joining us from South Bend today, I think, welcome, Dr. Smith.
I'm in South Bend, right on the St. Joseph River. Thank you for having me, and I'm glad to be talking.
Wonderful. And thank you for taking the time to share your findings with us. I have to say that when I saw this come over, the religious parenting title, I was really excited. I received a copy. I started to dig in. And And then pretty quickly, I realized this is a scholarly work. I had had a long day and I thought, I'm just going to open this up for some light reading. And then I think in the introduction is the sentence, skimming will not do. And I thought, okay, I perked up like this is serious stuff. The data collection, the diverse faith traditions you survey, the analytic models. I learned that this is not, I mean, it's you are one of the best at this, and that is research. It is not a drive-by study. So based on that, who is this book for? Parents, social scientists?
Yeah, so I'm a sociologist. I'm not a theologian, ethicist, or pastoral education person. The book has a few different audiences. One is people who are broadly interested in American religion, what's going on in American religion, what cultural changes are happening in American religion. But it does that by focusing on parents and how they try to pass on faith to children. It also has a theoretical argument in it that really would mostly be interesting to scholars, people in cultural sociology, anthropology. So to be totally clear, absolutely, it is not a how-to book. I think there are a lot of implications that could be drawn out of it, but the reader will have to do that.
And that's what we're going to try to do today is look at that data. In the introduction, you point out that we actually know very little about the intergenerational religious transmission from the perspective of the parents. So research out there exists about children, which you had a part of, but also you couldn't really do a meta-analysis of this because there was almost no data on how parents approach the job of passing on the faith.
Yeah, when we started this, there were some scholars that did some studies on a particular group or didn't have a great sample. There wasn't a lot of really good national level studies. So we thought there was an important project to do here. A couple decades ago, there wasn't much research at all on teenagers either. And in the last two decades, a number of us have been doing that. But what we learned from that is how important parents are. And so the next step after the teenager project was studying parents, and this book comes out of that project.
And, you know, this is a Catholic podcast, but as you pointed out, you're coming at this from a scientific point of view. So the traditions that you interviewed are vast.
Yeah, we tried to get a broad swath of parents who we interviewed, and that includes white Catholic, Latino Catholic, mainline Protestant, white evangelical, black Protestant, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Mormon. We have a lot of diversity in there. We actually did an oversample of Catholic parents. We have a disproportionate number of Catholic parents. We did on purpose because we really also wanted to focus on them and what's going on in the Catholic world.
And the other thing I felt pretty clear right away is that I expected to find a lot more diversity. I mean, that is a broad strata right there. But in the end, it seems like the parents had more similarities than not.
Yeah, this was something that was very surprising to us. As sociologists, we're always tuned into differences between distinct kind of groups. But what we found, surprisingly, was that religious parents from all different faith traditions tended to share a very similar view about what religion was, why it was valuable, why it was good for their kids, how they should pass it on. We were almost shocked at the near uniformity of the outlook of parents on what they were up against and what they were trying to do in transmitting their faith to their kids.
And too, I think the evidence that religion is a good thing in addition to fostering citizenship, strengthening society, and the benefits are not just social and cultural and political, which is what I also think our founding fathers believed. But keeping in mind, you know, these are religiously affiliated parents, so they're going to say that. But it seems like there was a unilateral consensus on that.
Yeah, of course, we did sample on religiously committed parents, so you would expect
right.
to hear that. But it was widely believed by these parents that religion is a good thing. Of course, there are bad religious expressions out there in the world, but for the most part, you know, the right kind of religions, it's a good thing. It's good for people. It gives them resources. It gives them something to come home to. It provides solidarity in the family. It provides good morality, enable people to make the right decisions. And of course, because almost all parents really care for their kids and want them to have good lives, they view raising their kids religiously and making sure their kids don't fall away from that as really something that's going to be really, really good for their own children and their families.
You know, that's such a good, important key point, because we are seeing a decline in religious practice. You hear the survey about the rise of the nuns, which is nun affiliated. So where is the disconnect? Did you see anything, any evidence in this survey that is it through being forced religion, or is it just a cultural shift counterculturally with peers? And was that any insight that was surprising to you as far as the break in that transmission?
I think that the forces and the causes for the growth of non-religious portion of Americans in the demographics, and young people especially not being interested in religion increasingly, I think the causes that are really complicated. They go back for decades. It's related to all sorts of factors, as big as globalization and the end of the Cold War to 9/11. And I think any of your listeners who were parents will feel this personally. There's just so many forces in media, in culture, technology, in materialism, in the economic pressures to get a job and to be ready to move around. There are just so many different kind of pressures that there just feels less and less out there in the social order that supports parents who are religious, who want to pass on the faith. So I guess what I'm saying is it's complicated, it's widespread, it's long-term forces that are having this kind of challenging effect. And parents really feel that. They know that. And so one of the things that does, that we talk about in the book, is it over the decades, it has placed more and more responsibility on the shoulder of parents. They feel the responsibility. It's their job to pass it on to their faith and practice to their kids, because there's not much beyond them. Their congregation may help, but they don't expect too much from their congregation. The parents really feel a huge weight of responsibility to make this succeed if they can.
And are they? I mean, I'm curious about that, because you, one of your phrases that you're famous for coining is moralistic therapeutic deism, MTD for short, and just kind of that idea where there is this moralistic therapeutic deist out there. No one is realizing the importance of encounter or transformation. So while this is on a parent's shoulders, are parents deeply helping kids have that transformational, or is it more just, well, you know, we just associate with this faith tradition and want our children to be good people? Did you get a sense in the survey that they're really imparting the faith deeply?
I mean, so what we have to recognize is there's a lot of diversity within, say, American Christianity or even Catholicism. The positive way to put the fact that parents have this huge responsibility is, of all the sociological factors we've ever looked at over decades now on what best associates with children being more religious when they grow up into their 20s and 30s is how religious their parents were. So the parents are in fact the most important influence in their children's lives, even if they can't feel that or see that at any given time. So if a parent is sort of cares about their faith, sort of goes to church or synagogue or whatever sometimes, but it's not the most important thing, that's kind of how their kids are going to turn out, only even less religious than that. Mm-hmm. However, if parents, and especially if it's a united front between a husband and a wife, if both parents are invested in this, it matters, they practice it, they model it. And another factor is talking to children. One of the most important things that happens in families whose kids grow up to carry on the faith is that they talk about their faith, their religion, their beliefs during the week, not just Sunday mornings, say. So talking with children about what I believe, why I believe it, why it's important, how it relates to life, that's a hugely powerful mechanism. But a lot of parents don't do that. You know, they think, well, we'll go to church, we'll be good people, and that'll be it. Hopefully they pick it up. But a lot of times those kids don't pick it up. So it's really, if you want your kid to be serious about their faith and practice in their early adulthood, the parents really have got to be intentional and invest in that.
And I think it goes back to what you said, too. Parents aren't getting a lot of support. So it's hard for maybe not everybody, live it out at home 7 days a week, if that's maybe not how they were brought up, or they're used to that, or they're busy. And it brought me back to Familiars Consortio. And what you just said there, there's a portion where it reads, the parents are, through the witness of their lives, the first heralds of the gospel for their children. Furthermore, by praying with their children, by reading the word of God, they become fully parents. And in that, they are begetters, not only of bodily life, but also the life through the Spirit's renewal flows from the cross. And so how much more then it sounds like the faith is transmitted domestically in this way, in homes where parents openly pray and read scripture. So you were able to see that does make a significant impact.
Yeah, the sociological research really clearly validates that kind of theological approach. And so, you know, one of the terms in the Catholic circles is the domestic church. It's not just church out there in the parish hall. It's at home has got to be a kind of a church. And so one example I think many will be able to relate to of why there's less support out beyond the home is, like, when I was a boy, there never would have been Little League football or baseball or anything scheduled on a Sunday morning. Like, Sunday was something different. Well, that's completely changed over the course of my life, where so religious parents, if their kids are into sports, they repeatedly have got to make choices between, are we going to go to church or are we going to go to the tennis tournament or are we going to go to traveling baseball or gymnastics or whatever. So more and more parents feel themselves, and they articulated this to us in their interviews, parents feel themselves really caught in binds about how to navigate or negotiate or balance out an authentic Christian life with all the other pressures that are going on out there.
You know, it's interesting. Former, still dear friend of mine and morning show partner, we talked about this. He was a softball coach, and he would say sometimes he would use Bible stories to illustrate some of the points or lessons he would teach. And he said from the time his oldest daughter was in softball to the time his younger daughter, which is probably a span of 10 years, he said it was so interesting to see by the time his younger daughter came up, a lot of these kids had never heard of these basic stories, Noah, David, and Goliath, and just how astonishing that quickly it seemed to be a departure in apologetics and catechesis and understanding of basic salvation history. Did that in any way kind of come up in your findings where you're seeing that the literacy of scripture or whatever it might be, maybe the Torah or whatever, the Quran, is declining at all, or was that not as researched?
I would say those kind of changes, they're becoming more and more evident now, but I think they've been longer term changes over time. In the early 20th century, American Catholicism had a certain character, it had a certain shape. It was much more communal. It might be an urban ethnic parish. It might have been more working class, higher density of Catholics who lived together. And so there was a whole kind of, for very many Catholics, there was a whole kind of neighborhood community way of life that supported being a Catholic. In the mid-20th century, American Catholics experienced this rapid upward mobility, education, moving to the suburbs, and that just changed the character of the community of the Catholics lived in. And my observation is Catholics didn't figure out new ways to pass on the faith effectively in this more kind of urban, middle class, more diffuse atmosphere. By the late 60s and 70s, there was a kind of a loss of effective catechesis. And so now you have, it's not just Catholics either, it's also happened in mainline Protestants. Now you have a lot of young people who don't have elementary references to fundamentally Western cultural things. Even to understand Western literature, you have to know the Bible. And increasingly, I think young people just don't have those references. And it's for older people like myself, it's a little troubling what's going to happen. But it seems to me the Catholic Church in the United States needs to figure out better ways of pulling off community. Where my observation is sometimes as soon as the Eucharist is done, there are people heading out the door. Like, you couldn't even meet them and find out who they are. They're gone before the liturgy is even over. And it's just a problem. Kids don't find that at all appealing.
In your finding too, at the end of the book, you say the hardest struggle American parents encounter passing on religion and navigating that balance between force and choice. So, you know, when you talk about it, and I've seen that as well, people leaving after receiving communion, that it's like, well, they're there out of some obligation, or I don't want to say force, but I mean, you rightly point out that there may be a fear of rebellion if religion is forced. Just curious to get your input on this, because I know you did a long-term study as well, as we talked about in the top of the show, of children and young adults. Mm-hmm. And now this is the bookend of that with a parent. So do you see a secret sauce for parents walking that middle ground between force and choice?
I don't know if there's a secret sauce, but this is the major dilemma that parents of all different traditions face, and that is, on the one hand, they feel themselves as parents responsible, and they believe they have some authority over their children to sort of lead them in a certain direction, and they think it's really good and important for them to raise them in their family's religious tradition. And so they really, really want to pass on their faith, and they want to be authoritative parents in that way. On the other hand, the same parents feel like they're worried their kids will rebel, they're worried they're going to shove it down their throats, they're worried they'll be too heavy-handed. And so parents are constantly struggling with, how do I strike a balance that's going to work for my children? And different children can be different within the same household, between sort of being authoritative, not authoritarian, but authoritative, and too heavy-handed, too directive. And it's almost as if the children may not realize this at the time, but it's almost as if the children's potential threat of rebelling and really leaving the faith, it kind of holds parents hostage from being too authoritative. And so very many parents who would like to be more authoritative end up being sort of, you know, tentative about passing on faith to the kids because they're so afraid of the possible rebellion. The other factor that's important in all this, and we've shown this statistically, the quality of relationships between parents and children really matters too. It's kind of a mediating factor here. If parents have really good, close, warm relationship with their kids, and they've also developed standards, expectations, and consequences, those kind of parents are much more likely to be able to pass on their faith to their children than parents who are grossly authoritarian or unengaged or just permissive. Those kind of, the kids raised with those kind of parents end up just doing their own thing later on.
You know, it's interesting. I recently interviewed a friend of mine, Dr. Ray Gurundi, a psychologist and adopted dad and speaker and writer. And he and I were talking about raising children, different ages. And I said, do you think that children don't respect their parents as much? Because I know growing up, if my father told me to do something, I did it. And he just scoffed and laughed and said, absolutely. And I thought that was interesting because I feel that in my own home, and I don't really know why, whether it's a lack of consistency, though we try our best. Have you seen that across the board?
The larger cultural context is one of individualism and skepticism toward authority and institutions. That's just the larger context, right? That's partly being an American is individualistic. And for decades now, Americans have become less and less trusting of authorities. However, I would say, what I learned when I interviewed hundreds of teenagers around the country, not just children, but teenagers, is that they have a lot more regard for their parents, unless their parents are really problematic people. If they have decent parents, teenagers have a lot more regard for their parents than they let on to. They may roll their eyes, they may be disrespectful, whatever. But when they talk to a sociologist and the sociologist asks them, who do you listen to? Who do you learn from? Who do you respect? They'll say, well, my parents, obviously. So I think in some ways we can underestimate or we can put too much weight on the eye rolling and not realize, no, deep down, most kids still look to their parents, especially if they're pretty decent parents, for guidance and advice and teaching. So I think that's something that parents should take heart in and in some ways not take too seriously their kids' apparent disrespect.
Well, that is absolutely a note of hope. Thank you for that. I know we have to conclude here, but I just wanted to ask if there was anything for you personally that came out of the study. It was such an in-depth, fantastically thorough look. Anything that surprised you out of left field that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, studying parents compared to studying teenagers gave me a different overall view of things. So when I spent 15 years studying teenagers, teenagers are great. I learned they're really human beings and so on. But I came away with a pretty disheartened view of things, especially of American adults. I thought so many problems in teenagers' lives are caused by problematic adults in their lives. And we like to blame teenagers, but, you know, adults are part of the problem. Well, when I studied parents, I somehow had a different window on things, and I came away much more encouraged that at least the parents we talked to, the religious parents we sampled, I came away with a lot more respect, with a lot more admiration for how hard parents are trying, how much they are really invested in this, how much effort and thought and emotion and energy they put into trying to be good parents. So I really came away kind of heartened at how many good parents there are out there trying very hard, who find themselves in difficult situations and sometimes overwhelmed, but they're really trying to do their best. That was encouraging for me.
Well, that's helpful. As we wrap up, any final words of encouragement that you might offer? I mean, and I know that this is a scientific-based book, but just from heart to heart for parents and habits and takeaways that you found maybe encouraging.
I mean, I'm a parent too, so there's plenty to worry about and to berate ourselves about. But I think what the sociology I have done over the decades shows is that parents have more capacity to shape their children than they often realize when they're in the situation. And so kind of to have faith in the institution of parenting and in oneself doing one's best. But that also adds a responsibility. Like, it really matters what parents do. It really matters what they prioritize, what they're intentional about. And the other thing I would say is parents not to beat themselves up too much either. Like, within the same family, we know one child can become a priest and the other can become an atheist. And so parents have a lot of responsibility, but they don't have ultimate responsibility. It's not, everything doesn't fall on their shoulders. So I think it's really just to be faithful, to do their best, and not to try to control everything in the end.
Thank you so much for this book. The title again is Religious Parenting, Transmitting Faith and Values in Contemporary America. Christian Smith, Bridget Ritz, Michael Rotolo, thank you so much. Thank you for this book. Thank you for your work. Appreciate your time, Dr. Smith.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you again to Dr. Christian Smith. You know, raising saints is tough work, but also I think after that conversation, a reminder to me, the privilege of our lives. And I think one of the many takeaways is that even if you feel like you're not getting through, remain faithful, because our children may just be absorbing and believing far more than what is evident. And I think also that means to live the faith, which is, as he said, a big responsibility, but also a beautiful call to be that witness with great fidelity, and obviously also too with God's grace. On next week's show, highlights from the Holy Land as promised. So I packed my recorder. I captured a few key moments and stories. So we will unpack that for you. Oh, and finally, one more thing. Tickets for our Arise retreat, wanted to mention this, are still available. We will be cutting off reservations at the beginning of May unless we sell out before then. But right now, there are still a few spots. So the dates, June 5th through the 7th, the Jesuit Retreat Center in Cleveland, Ohio, with Father Joseph Tuscan, and he will be our retreat master. Workshops, opportunities for holy leisure, obviously mass, reconciliation, fellowship, and so much more. So you can find information at brooketaylor.us, Brooke with an E, brooketaylor.us. And while you're there, speaking of pilgrimage, would love to also have you consider joining us this summer as we go to Ireland. If you could use a beautiful trip to a land of rainbow saints and scholars, join us as we go to the Emerald Isle. That's coming up in July of this year. And again, you can find out more details on my website at brooketaylor.us. God bless you, friends. Until next time, peace and love.
Good Things Radio is a production of St. Gabriel Media. Adventure, encounter, evangelize. To find out more, or to schedule Brooke to speak to your group or parish, visit brooketaylor.us. That's brooketaylor.us. Good Things Radio is a production of Coming Home Studios, produced by Mark Cumming. Find out more at www.cominghomestudio.com.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer. Fenley and Jeminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY, that's LEARN, the number 2, PRAY, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.